listener production.
Welcome back to episode 206 of the Howie Games Part B featuring John Rahm. Remember, you can see John in action in Adelaide, April 26 to 28. Just head to livegolf.com/events/Adelaide-2024 for all tickets. And you can also see the details in the show notes. On we go. We get to January 2016. Farmers Insurance, your first PGA Tour win, where I was looking at it this morning, Johnny. You hole a 60-footer, an incredibly long putt.
Really a two-part putt.
Left to right all the way.
Bobbled early coming out. Will it have an effect on the speed?
It's going to be good. His caddy, Adam Hayes, helped him read this.
So smart to get behind it, too.
How about making it? Yes! Oh! Incredible!
And then, I don't know if your world changed. Did you, what does it do as a professional athlete to all of a sudden realize that, yeah, okay, I'm here, I can do this?
So I think throughout my career, I can go back and the situations where I say, I see myself go to the next level and then prove myself that I belong there. Luckily, when I was in college, my third year in 2015, I finished fifth in the Phoenix Open as an amateur. So I felt like I had the talent to be there. And when I won the tournament, more than, I belong, it was more of a thank God it came this quickly, right? Like, thank God this happened this fast and it's over with. Especially the fashion I did. It's not only that putt. I shot 6 under on the back nine, eagled both par fives, birdied 17, and then make that long putt on 18, which people that know golf or not, I know 60 feet is a long putt, but it was very downhill. It was about a ball. Like, all I had to do was hit it 10 feet and it was going to get to the hole. So it was more of a hope it hits the line, and if not two putt. With a two putt, I would have still won the tournament, but making that putt and just sealing it was absolutely incredible. You dream of things like that, right? You dream of your win to be something that static and that exciting. But when it happens, it's actually hard to believe. Like, I couldn't sleep that night seeing that putt over and over because I couldn't believe that it actually happened. And it was just more that relief of, okay, it's done. I've won my tournament finally, and keep on going.
Before we talk about keeping on going, what I've learned doing this show, John, is for every success, there is a lot of failures that build that success. And obviously in golf, there's one successful player and there's 120-odd that aren't. And I tried to read and I couldn't really find anything. Take me to a tournament where you think you could have got the job done and you didn't, and how you mentally go and work through that and get over that and what that does for you. So the failure that may somewhere down the track create success.
Well, the biggest one I would say for me was the Players. I had the lead on Sunday and had a terrible round. And even through my bad moments, I still had my chances and just completely handled it so wrong and ended up losing it, right? It was a year Rory won.
What'd you do wrong?
A lot of things.
And Rory McIlroy is a Players champion. As many as 10, 12 players could have won this not very long ago. And it's the guy who holds the sixth ranking in the world.
I think, so at first, I had a very hard time that day maintaining myself in the present and just playing golf like I do, right? I was too reactive of what other people were doing. Because if you go through the round early on, when people make birdies, I make bogeys, and then other players start making mistakes, and then I make birdies, right? So it was very much a reactive round and rushed. The whole day I just felt rushed. I never took my time and really centered myself, right? And I was playing good enough to win. That was one of those where I shot 64 the day before to take the lead.
What a round of golf. And boy, just like that, John Rahm will be right in the spotlight tomorrow.
That is a 64. It matches Jim Furyk's 64 yesterday, the round of the championship. And that's a nice little trend that Rahm has going. 69, 60.
I was playing really good golf, and there's really no excuse besides just not handling that moment properly.
So in a situation like that, you walk off the course. Are you an athlete that it stays with you for a minute, an hour, a month? And what do you learn in those situations?
Well, from every mistake, there's an opportunity, right? So
okay,
you can choose to learn. That was really the first time I had the lead in a big event going into Sunday. It hurt. I'm not going to lie. The place is the tournament, you know, you dream to win in, and it's not an easy one to win on. And it hurt not to get it done. Knowing that it was my fault, and I could have done so many more things better. But with that said, I will be usually, no matter what happens bad, I'm angry for tops 30 minutes to an hour after the round, or until I get some food sometimes. Like that's what my wife knows. If I'm coming steaming off the golf course and I see her, she knows not to say much, but she knows, okay, we need to get him food. Just because you play, you're tired, and just eating and sitting down just makes you rethink, right? And pretty quickly, I just get to normal. So at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, it's just golf, right? My life off the golf course doesn't drastically change whether I win that or not, right? Especially, we have a lot of positives going for me. So once that happens, you got to learn and analyze what you did wrong, what happened, and then try to improve upon that.
Okay.
I mean, it's part of the process. So whether you win or not, the next day you're still waking up and going to practice again. So it really is just the process.
So in Australia, we obviously have the Australian guys can compete in the President's Cup, which is an amazing event, but you Europeans have the Ryder Cup. I was looking back. I actually watched it. I went to watch 10 minutes of you playing Tiger in the Ryder Cup in 2018 as the youngest player in the European team, and I watched an hour. So you cost me a bloody hour this morning because it was captivating. What is it? What is it like? Talk to me about Ryder Cup as a kid playing against arguably the greatest golfer of all time, who you ended up beating.
So what a lot of people don't know about that week is I had my wisdom teeth taken out 10 days before the week of the Ryder Cup because I had an infection. Ouch. I had to. So I wasn't allowed to eat solid food till like Ryder Cup week, and I just hit it terrible. Like I was playing terrible, terrible golf. And then Saturday night, I see the parents and I get paired with Tiger Woods. And the panic level was at an all-time high. Tiger had just won. I'm like, he's playing good. Ideally, that golf course fits his game more than me. At that point, the longer the golf course, the better. That one's not. And I was like, oh, man, this is terrible. Luckily, we had a lead, but I'm like, oh, this is just unfortunate in many ways. And it took a lot to flip that right into a positive. A lot of conversations with Tommy Fleetwood, who I played Tiger a couple of times, and Thomas Bjorn, and coming up with maybe a game plan. And the one thing I learned is, okay, I got to go out there and play myself. Even though it's match play and I'm playing Tiger Woods, I got to almost try to eliminate him from the picture and just forget that he's there, right? Because it is Tiger. Even though you're in Europe, he's going to have a lot of support, especially having just been that comeback in 2018, right? So that was my plan. I just tried to walk and not even see him there. I just have somebody I had to beat, and that was it.
Representing the United States of America, Tiger Woods. Representing Europe, John Rahm.
And we had a really good match. I actually played really good golf. Played great golf on that Sunday. The only mistake I'd say I would made was missing about a 3-4 foot putt on 16 to go to 17 with a 2-up lead. But then was able to birdie 17 to win it.
Rahm to win. That's for 2-1 victory. Get Europe to 12.5. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now he's excited.
All the emotion comes pouring out of John Rahm. Absolutely sensational. The youngest man on either team.
It was quite great, honestly. I started great, put the ball in the fairway on one.
Well, there's not a man in the 24 that won't breathe a massive sigh of relief to hit that fairway today.
Hit it to 3 feet. Made the putt, started with a 1-up lead and seeing the crowd support it. It's hard to explain.
Right in the middle, brilliant. John Rahm, 1-up on Tiger Woods.
The way I tell people, I think I have the biggest overreaction to making a 4-footer ever in golf. And that was the winning putt on 17. But if I, when I tell you the story, so my grandfather had just died that summer, who really wanted to see me in the Ryder Cup, and he was my biggest fan, right? You know, my grandparents were a big part of my life. And when I'm reading that putt, I'm aware of the moment because I know Tiger's there, right? I'm like, okay, well, if I tie the hole, worst case, I go one up to 18, but I did not want to see 18 because it's really hard hole and anything could happen, right? Like, when I make the putt, I've just missed a three-footer. So that memory's still there. And while I'm reading it, I'm obviously aware of my grandpa, but somebody yells in Spanish, "Do it for Seve." Now, as such a big Seve fan as I am, the amount of pressure I felt in the moment, like, oh my God, how come this guy is just telling me this now, right? But it almost instantly flipped, and I thought of my grandpa and Seve up in heaven just together, wheeling that ball into the hole, just helping me out, right? So instantly it was like from pressure to almost an uplifting feeling to where I went to that ball thinking, oh, this is going in. There's no way. And yeah, I mean, I hit a perfect putt. He goes dead center. And the reaction is my first ever Ryder Cup point. I beat Tiger Woods, which is my all-time hero. And then the feeling of my grandpa and Seve up in heaven, right? So that's why that reaction was what it was. I actually turn around, and when I shake Tiger's hand, I apologize because I'm fully aware that maybe it was too much. But he was very gracious and told me, dude, don't worry about it. It's deserved, well earned. But yeah, there was a lot going on. And on top of that, it's a Ryder Cup. I mean, it's kind of a big deal.
It's funny that you're in some ways apologetic, and I can understand you speaking to your opponent, but that when I saw your celebration on that, not knowing the backstory, that's when I immediately thought the punters, the crowd as we call them here in Australia, are going to love this bloke at Live in Adelaide because he plays with emotion and passion. So it's funny how you're almost half apologetic for it, where I'm like, bang, this is what I want from golf.
It's only because I respect Tiger so much. And
yeah, and I get that.
It's just out of like, oh man, I got like, not apologetic for winning, but for the reaction.
Yeah.
Had it been a longer putt, I think it's completely excused. Like my reaction at the US Open and at Torrey Pines, when I'm perfectly excused, right? I mean, it's a big deal, but that is, I don't know, it's 4 feet. It's not like I won the Ryder Cup. It was early on, right? It's like, I don't know. I just felt like maybe I don't know. It's that's weird, but it you know, everything together is just, it just came out.
You mentioned Torrey Pines 2021, your first major. And again, I'm looking at that, your whole ripping putt. Correct me if I'm wrong, but a birdie on 17 to, I think, equal was Schwartzel, the South African year. Was it Oosthuizen?
It was Louis.
Oosthuizen.
Rahm, right at 24 feet. Big swinger to the right.
And then on 18, another birdie.
Another one is at the 72nd hole, this time for Rahm to take the lead in the US Open.
And then, so you've almost got your hands, the first Spaniard to win the US Open. And then I love it because in the coverage they cut and you're on the practice fairway and like everything you've wanted to achieve since you were a kid is there and you have to wait. What is that period like? Because he's coming up, hasn't completed his round, so he can still, unlikely as it was, he can still take you to a playoff.
Yeah, so I took a one-shot lead and he was on 15 green. So I think he two-putted 15 and you're watching in, right? And 15, 16 are not birdie holes. So not that I'm too worried there. 17, if you put the ball in the fairway, it was a possibility because with how firm it was, he could have made birdie. Then 18, same thing, being a par five, right? So that's where I was worried. And then it honestly seemed like the longest hour of my life.
Like, was it?
Yeah, because you're not in control, right? Like I just made the putt. I'm in incredible euphoria, right? It's amazing. And then you have to come down and be like, all right, he can still take me to a playoff or he could still actually win. He has the holes. Like, I finished birdie-birdie, so he could finish birdie-birdie as well. And trying to deal with that was difficult. You go, cameras are following you. They want to see your reaction. I'm watching TV, so it's tough. I remember watching this tee shot on 18 when he hit it in the hazard, and it was one of the most uncomfortable feelings, looking at the TV knowing that there's a camera right in my face. Like, I can't be happy about it on TV. right? Obviously,
you can't be doing fist pumps, can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, I'm not upset to see you go on the Hazard. I love Louis because he's a fantastic player and a great guy. But at that moment, I'm not upset, obviously, right? So when I see him make bogey and then he misses the fairway on 18, takes going for the green out of the question, and he has to hold out this wet shot, and I'm hitting shots out on the range just in case, because you never know. But at that point, the crowd tells you, right? I'm hitting balls, and we heard a cheer, but it wasn't a very loud one like a hole out would entail. So at that point is when I stop and I look, and then they tell us, he missed it, you win the tournament.
And Spain has its first U.S. Open champion, John Rahm.
It was an incredible moment to share with my wife and our newborn, Kepa, who was 2 months old at the time.
Well, you got a baby under your arm.
Yeah, I think
that's
I tell
got
him.
Me.
I think
when the little fella's under your arm.
I think I grow him and I say, you have no idea what just happened.
You have no idea what this means right now. You will soon enough.
I mean, someday he will. Not that he would care or not, but, you know, not to only win a major, but to be the first Spanish player to win the U.S. Open was quite incredible. So you go from one of the highlights of my career to one of the most stressful hours of my career to then being the champion. It's such a hard feeling to describe. I mean, I know golf to a lot of people might not be the most exciting sport in the world, but to be a part of it, like those roller coasters you can go through, it's absolutely incredible.
Back to John Shawley. Competing against John on the Live Tour is Queenslander Cameron Smith. Cam joined the show back on episode 177. Check it out. He is the most laid-back cat you could ever meet and a star on the golf course.
It's amazing. I've played this game basically my whole life, and I'm still shitting myself on the first tee every week. It's something else. It's something that you never really get used to, I think, and I think it's good though. It means that it matters to you. It means that you care about it and you want to go out there and win it.
That is Cam Smith on episode 177 of the show. Let's get back to John.
I only have, well, one more topic and one question after that. So you take as much or as little time on this topic as you please, because your time is valuable. I know we're getting near the end. But that topic is a little tournament in Augusta called the Masters.
It's Sunday morning at the Masters, and what a day this could be for the number one ranked player in the world as the golf universe awaits a possible coronation of one of its biggest stars.
Before we talk about winning it, Adam Scott came on this show on episode 100, and he told me a story, John. So for those that aren't aware, the winner gets the green jacket for a year. You can take it away from Augusta. He would talk about back in Queensland, people would be coming around for dinner and he'd just casually leave the green jacket over the couch. So when they walked in, they would see the jacket and it would blow them away that there was the Masters green jacket.
The fun thing is you get to keep the jacket for a year after you win it, and then it always stays back in the locker room at the club. The jackets don't leave the club except for the champion who gets to carry it around. So I took it everywhere with me for 300 plus days. I mean, just to have it lying around the house. A few times I'd just leave it over the back of the sofa when we'd have friends coming over and stuff. And they'd walk in and, you know, sit on the sofa and I'm like, hang on, just get off that jacket. You know, they couldn't believe it's the jacket.
Tell me a story about you and what you've done with your famous green jacket, which within the year period, I guess you've still got.
Nothing like that. Nothing like that. A lot of people, yeah, would wear it and go through drive-thrus and things like that. I just never. I probably should do it just for fun and be able to say that I've done it. I think the closer I get to the Masters, the more I'll wear it, just because I know time's coming up. But I have it on my closet, and every day when I go get dressed, I see it. Every once in a while, put it on, but I never hasn't ventured out of the house a lot, to be honest. Nothing special like that. Obviously, I show people, but I don't have it advertised. Let's just say that.
And when you show people, does it have, like, it's a green jacket, right? It's just a green piece of cloth. But what type of awe does it bring to people when you show it to them?
Most people are speechless, Most people are speechless.
Really?
Yeah, most people are.
Wow.
Especially if I put it on, because, you know, most of the people seeing it are family or close enough to where they understand the significance of it. And yeah, a lot of people get a little emotional. I get emotional, right, if I start thinking about it too. So yeah, it's a very special trophy to have that you only keep for a year. It's hard to put into words. I can't really explain it.
So the tournament itself, I can summarize it for people, but for the tournament itself, tell me about your mental state. So day one, you shot 7 under, you equal first. Day two, 10 under, second behind Koepka on 12. Day three, you're 9 under, Koepka's 11. But it's an unusual tournament because the weather, so you're playing a little bit the next morning, etc. How do you mentally keep – when the pressure of the Masters, when that first thought comes in your head, shit, I could win the US Masters here, which would have been on Seve's birthday. Mm-hmm. How do you mentally process that to not get ahead of yourself and picture in your mind lifting up the trophy?
I think that's a challenge every time you're in contention in a tournament. For that one – in a weird way, Friday and Saturday were the easier part because you were, with the rain delays and the weather, you had enough worry. Like, when it's pouring down rain and it's blowing wind, you almost forget. Like, you're just trying to, you know, deal with the elements and deal with that. So for that period of time, and it was weird that you're not thinking about golf, it obviously became very, very real when Brooks and I teed off last on Sunday. That's when things changed quite a bit, right? That's when you're playing and, okay, this is to win it. Actually to win it. So at first, obviously, I'm chasing Brooks, so I'm not really thinking about winning. But once I take the lead on six, those thoughts do come and you have to be able to manage them.
And we have a new leader, one third of the way to the final round on a Sunday at the Masters.
So what does that mean? What does manage those thoughts mean? This is the gist
exactly
of what I
you
wanted to ask
you. You take the lead
about.
And you're thinking, you're obviously, you kind of start having, I a lot of times have thoughts of, man, imagine we actually have a tap in to win the Masters. Like, imagine, right? And I'm like, well, it's a whole lot of golf in between to make that happen. So you kind of need to keep yourself on the moment and battle those thoughts that come in, right? Not battle, but you almost need to let them go and just keep focusing on you. And I think because that day I set myself a target score to shoot. I wanted to shoot 69 or better. I just kept hacking at that and then just trying to manage the lead, right? Even at that point, I'm seeing Jordan Spieth and Phil Mickelson going off, shooting very low and catching up to the lead. So at the same time, you try to distance yourself as much as you can, right? I think it was a two-shot lead starting on 10, and I was able to birdie 13-14 to make it a four-shot lead.
Oh, he tucks it in! John Rahm to 12 under. Only the fifth birdie of the day at the 14th hole. And Rahm up four. With four holes left.
You try to still keep playing good golf because a lot of people that may not know about the history of the game, in 2004, Ernie Els stood on 14 tee box with a three-shot lead, played the last five holes, one under par, and did not win the Masters.
We are accustomed to this with Greg Norman leading Faldo by five shots in the 90s. Australians know the heartbreak of the Masters more than most, to be honest.
So you still need to stay in it. And keep hitting those shots because they're not easy, right? I hate when people tell me, oh, it was a boring finish. I'm glad it was boring for you because it's very stressful. The only time I was safe is when I felt like I hit that third shot on the green and that on 18 and that was that.
One last good solid strike.
Oh, yes. Some major style points. Now he knows he's got it.
Before that, it's a lot of battling of you wanting to win and your feelings and challenge the golf course in a way where you can still be aggressive and make birdies, but you never want to give up anything, right? It's is maintaining that sweet spot. But at the end of the day, when you're playing, it's not like you're thinking about all that, right? You just try to do what's best for yourself in that moment. And I think with the pressure being so big on Sunday and you being so nervous, it's almost easier to maintain yourself centered just because you're so aware of everything that's happening, right? It feels like those last nine holes are a lot longer than the 2 hours they really are.
From sunrise to sunset, Rahm wins the Masters Marathon.
Last question I have for you. I realize you've got to go. We have a lot of kids listening to this show, and you will understand the responsibility of this because you now have a young family. For all the kids out there, John, that want to achieve success in their field, what lasting piece of advice would you leave them with?
This is always very hard.
Yeah.
Everybody's different, but you have to find your passion. It's a lot easier to achieve great things when you're passionate about what you're doing because it doesn't feel like work. It's that simple. Going out to practice, going out to work out and spend the time and the sacrifices that it requires is a lot easier when you absolutely love what you're doing. A lot easier. In fact, it doesn't really feel like a sacrifice. Maybe to other people it does, but not to you because that's what you want to do. So once you find your passion, it's still an immense amount of hard work and dedication to be able to get to be one of the best in the world or anything. And that's what my dad always said. He's like, son, I don't care if you want to be the best golfer in the world, the best garbage man in the world, the best journalist in the world. It doesn't matter. To be able to get there, you need to have an incredible discipline and incredible work ethic. And that's where you need to get to. Obviously, there's different ages where you can make your practice fun and your days are entertaining, but it's a lot of hours that you need to spend doing what you need to do to be able to get there.
You've been so generous with your time. I could ask you 3 more hours of questions. We can't wait to see you in Adelaide. Maybe you have a great time in Saudi Arabia, John. It's been a privilege to have you on the show. Go well, and we can't wait to see you in this part of the world, mate. Good on you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to John for his time and his willingness to speak openly via Zoom to someone he's never met before, and the team at LIV for making this episode happen. Great that they are making their athletes available to their fans. Until next week with Milay Jednak, peace and love.
And we can do it if we try, try, try. If we try, try, try. If we try, try, try.